Executive Committee, April 15th, 2004, tape number one.
On the agenda, is there any additions or corrections to the agenda?
What about, oh, okay, no, it's here, okay.
Tape number four, public utility, we witnessed today, so that we won't be talking about that today.
What, I'm sorry?
Number four on the agenda, you can cross off because public utility, we witnessed today. And that has to do with a laptop requirement in conjunction with the campus going wireless, in case you're curious about what that's all about.
That we would all get laptops?
Well, the idea would be, well, who would pay for them?
Everyone else would be using them.
The idea is the campus goes wireless, so the idea is students would be required to have laptops and all that, so. That's what that's going on, but other than that.
This is due to the benefit of electromagnetic.
Okay, anything else on the agenda?
I don't want to be wired.
It's going to be one of those days, I love it, okay. All right, any objection to the agenda? Can we consider it approved? Good. No, I'm sorry. Never mind.
Speak up.
Speak up, Melanie.
It seems to me that maybe we need to do something about Rick Lutman, replacing Rick Lutman, so I know that structural function.
That's either going to come during my report or your report.
Okay, my report or your report.
Replace him.
Well, it's on this agenda.
Oh, you mean for a sabbatical.
Are there any changes or corrections to the minutes of the 11th, which were emailed to you? Hearing none? Can we consider those minutes approved?
Yes.
Okay. Correspondence received under my report, since we have a couple minutes before our first time certain. I do have a couple things I want to announce to you. At our May 6th meeting, the Vice Mayor of Cotati will be joining us at a time certain of 3:15 p.m.
Vice Mayor?
And the mayor will make it. And I believe you have a power set aside for that meeting. Yes, sir?
I'm sorry, you said for which?
May 6th meeting.
Has it already been?
It's already been set up and confirmed, yes.
So may I just ask, procedure-wise, we asked the mayors to come out of courtesy, is that right?
Yes, and Rick's suggesting, the executive committee suggested.
That's been the history of doing, is that right?
Yes.
Then I'm wondering why the Vice Mayor, is it because we expect they're really going to?
As I just said, the mayor was not available, so the Vice Mayor's coming instead, or is that not?
Okay, I guess because I was thought that the courtesy was, you know, extended to the mayor.
Right.
And then they say, no, well, then that's okay. I mean, are they going, only because our schedules, our agendas are so full. Do you follow what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
Is it that they're going to really give us some information, or is it, does it count?
They just feel like they have to come.
Do you?
I see what you're saying.
Yeah, because.
Okay.
I would accept the Vice Mayor.
I mean, I guess it's already been extended.
Tell them we don't have any vices.
Yeah, bring the vices with you.
We have too many vices.
Okay, well, let Laurel explain the process, okay?
I called the office, and what I said was that the Senate would like to invite the mayor to come talk to the Senate about any issues in the city of Cotati that might be of interest to the university. And so I put it that way, and so when they called me back, they said, well, unfortunately, the mayor is, I only could give 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
The mayor is not available, but the Vice Mayor would be very happy to come and believe she can give you that kind of information.
So, okay, so it is information sharing more than, okay.
All right. As you all probably know, Rick Lutman has resigned from the Senate.
No, I did not know that. Can I please hear the story?
When Melanie and I got back from our last Senate meeting, there were literally 20 minutes after the meeting, there was an email saying, from Rick, saying he resigned from the Senate and from the Executive Committee, period.
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 He didn't say anything more.
That's all he said.
And we both emailed him, but I never.
Actually, if you would care to see it, I mean, I will read it to you.
That's okay, I believe you.
Right there, one sentence, okay?
He's not usually quite so succinct.
I know. So it is on the proposed agenda for our next meeting that we elect a replacement for Rick on the Executive Committee for the rest of this semester, which is all of 2 weeks. So. That, but it would be nice to have the full complement for the rest of the semester. Mm-hmm. And then I believe we have to have an election for his seat because he's a campus-wide, he's an at-large senator, so we're going to have an election to replace him on the Senate itself as well, so.
You mean for, oh, how many at-large senators do we have, too?
I believe they're year and year. And I don't know when that election, we have three.
Three, okay.
When is that election going to take place? We have to have this.
Special.
Spring or?
Spring or?
So we'll have to do it in May.
We're going to have about zero response voting.
We've already had our election.
Yeah.
So do we do it in fall, do we do it in spring, what do we do?
Well, we have tried to stay with just having spring elections, and so it's already too late now, and yet, so either we would be without for a whole year.
That wouldn't be good.
Or we would have to have a special election.
Yeah, the Constitution says, or the bylaws say, if the vacancy is for a year or less, we can appoint, this is a two-year vacancy, so we're going to have an election.
2 years left.
Yeah.
Are you sure he can't be otherwise considered? Has no one talked to him?
I did.
We do, no.
And he's adamant?
He's adamant.
Yeah, he's adamant.
Okay.
That's true, so.
All right, so I guess we talked, we referred to structure and functions about setting up an election. Is there objection to that? Okay. All right, also correspondence received, the Associated Students has passed a resolution opposing Governor Schwarzenegger's proposed budget cuts to higher education. Associated Students Senate has passed that resolution. Among other things, the resolution asks the governor to make education a priority and states that eliminating state support threatens California's master plan for higher education by diminishing accessibility, affordability, and quality of higher education. And I will be presenting that to the Senate as well as part of my report. Dean Leader in the School of Social Sciences has asked me to announce that the new student convocation for fall semester will be on Tuesday, August 24th from 11 to 12. Faculty meet at the loading dock downstairs, 10:45, and we walk over to the plaza at the information center and have a ceremony and pizza and stuff.
In regalia.
Out in the sun, yeah. It's very hot out there, so keep that in mind. And I'll be announcing that to the Senate as well. Next on the list, if you did or did not notice, I don't know, Laurel is using a slightly different format for the minutes, an abbreviated format. Instead of 20 pages, you're getting 10. And in discussion, the items, discussion items are not always identified by who says them. And this is for two reasons. One, to conform more closely to Robert's Rules of Order, and secondly, to help with some ergonomic issues that affect Laurel, because she does so much typing of minutes. So if there's any comment on the minutes at this point, if you noticed anything about them that you liked or disliked or whatever, the one thing that I noticed about the change in the minutes was that there are times when commentary is made, and I would like to see a clear distinction made between, for example, if President Armenyana said something, it's going to mean something entirely different than if Lowell said it. Those of us in the meeting might be able to figure that out, but someone reading the minutes from off campus or not there might not, and it's just something that a reaction I had. It is not required by Robert's Rules that the individual statements made in the discussion item section are identified by speaker, but that's the only, otherwise I think they're great. So is there any other comment about the minutes? Is it okay if Laurel goes ahead with this format?
Yeah, I thought they were very accessible, yeah. Readable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think they did a good job of picking up the highlights.
Abbreviated, yep. It helps us too.
Yes, okay. Okay, the next the next item on the agenda is, my report is that Laurel did send out an email to those of you that are chairs of standing committees about the reassignment time available for next year, so that when the chairs of committees next year are chosen, you'll know what's available for your schedule. And I encourage you to stay on top of that. Also, we are trying to schedule this party for April 24th. Several of you have gotten back to me. I don't, Brigitte, you haven't gotten back to me about this.
It's okay.
You can, okay, so you can make it.
Okay.
And who else was it that hadn't? Somebody else. Is there any objection to making this a, and this is not a formal objection here, but is there any objection to doing like a potluck kind of thing?
Sounds fun.
And
sort of to save, it's either going to be at my house or Eduardo's house. And I have no idea if Eduardo's talked to Holly about it yet, so we don't know yet where it's going to be. In either case, I don't think we should ask Holly to do a lot of cooking, and I don't have the facilities to do a lot of cooking, so.
There will be no deck burning.
Yeah, no deck burning. I don't have a deck to burn.
I'm not hosting another until I get my deck painted.
Somebody would want me to ask Bob if he could make it, so.
Does Bob contribute?
I support that. Okay, good. So I'll try to track down Eduardo in the next day and see what's going on. We'll let you know where it's going to be, and spouses, partners, friends, whatever, are invited. I just want to tell you, if it's going to be at my house, it's going to be executive committee plus about 10 other people. I'd like to invite some people that have been sort of a survival network for me as chair. Is there any objection to that?
Fully support.
I mean, it's not like it's, I mean, it's real familiar people to most of you, so. Okay, faculty and some deans. All right. So that's that story. All right, we'll pursue that.
We would all just bring something to contribute food-wise and something to contribute drink-wise.
Or something to drink and no food, whatever.
Maybe we should organize like we did last time.
That's exactly what I'm going to do.
So we don't get
seven. Once we figure out where it is and what we need. You know, two people bring salad, two people bring main dish. We'll do it by main dish. Okay. I know this is a long report, but there was a meeting of campus Senate chairs on April 1st in San Francisco. I have a written report. It will be available to the Senate. There were two major issues discussed. I left a little early. One was the transfer pattern. There's a bill in the state legislature that's trying to require the CSU to establish a common transfer pattern across majors community colleges to CSU, and I'm pretty sure you all know about this. And the statewide Senate passed a resolution actually opposing the bill, but then they have a resolution laying out a transfer pattern, and the idea is to be proactive and do it on our own so the state legislature doesn't have to do it. They also passed a resolution that defines excess units, and this is a suggestion on the governor's part, that students who take units in excess of the number required for a degree get somehow fined for taking excess units, and they've passed a resolution defining excess units as 20% over what it takes to get a degree. Now that 20% just happens to fit into the average number of units that students take to graduate anyway, which is 140 or 141, depending on whether they come to us native or whether they go through the community colleges. The reason for both of these policies is the CSU is arguing that the only way to create additional space for new students is by getting our current students to graduate sooner. So that's what's going on there. There's also in the meeting with David Spence, who's the Vice Chancellor for Academic Affairs system-wide, there was something that I thought you might be interested in regarding reassignment time. He was asked specifically whether or not the chancellor had ordered a 35 or 40% reduction in state-supported reassignment time for faculty. And Spence stated that there was no formal directive to that effect, but he would be disappointed if assigned time were to go up in these budget times. So I thought I would let you know about the statewide administration's attitude toward assignment time. The full report will be in the Senate packet, and I'll go into a little bit more detail when we get to the Senate. And that's it. So that's done. Okay, moving on to our first agenda item, a couple minutes late, is the strategic planning draft for academic affairs. You'll notice in your packet that you have what the academic affairs strategic planning committee has come up with so far, mission, vision, strategic areas, and general strategies. This is in the packet, or in strategic initiatives, this is in the packet because we promised to get this to the Senate as soon as possible after it was done. Bob Warmock, Elaine, and Bob have all recommended that the executive committee formally refer this to our standing committees for comment and review before it goes to the Senate for comment and review. So what I'd like is, if you're willing to do that, refer this formally to APC, EPC, Student Affairs, and SAC for any comment or review they may have. And then this would be on the Senate's agenda for Would it be, we have a meeting April, May 6th, don't we?
Yep.
That's not.
I see you.
May 6th, and then we had, then it would be May 20th, what, the next meeting would be May 20th, yeah. On the last page, thank you, okay. So then the idea would be that this would come to the Senate for a first reading on May 6th, and the second reading would be May 20th, at all, a suggestion for a schedule. And there are two community meetings scheduled, I don't know if.
The 27th or 30th, I believe.
Yeah, one is the 27th from 11:40 to 1 of all things.
Sorry, what is this?
These are community meetings where the entire campus is invited to discuss this.
Has this been?
Sent out.
Sent out?
Yeah, it has. I'm just reiterating here, from 11:40 to 1 o'clock.
Tuesday, Friday.
Tuesday, April 27th in Darwin 2, and then Friday, April 30th from 1:30 to 3 in Stevenson 1002. And those are open forums.
And where was the, what was the date of the first one?
Tuesday, April 27th. 11:40 to 1 o'clock in Darwin 2.
Okay.
Okay?
11:40. Okay, so my comment on the schedule for going to the committees is that since EPC meets on the same day as the Senate, that means that we'll just be having our second reading of this on the same day as the Senate where the first reading is, so I wouldn't have anything for this committee the week before.
Okay, that's fine.
Okay.
If you can present the major points at the Senate, if there are, that'd be great. And all of the standing committees, if any of the, any of your subcommittees, the standing committees, subcommittees you think might be interested in this, get this out to them too.
I've already put it in.
Great, good, okay, good. So, we can take a look at it. Okay, is there any other comment on this?
No, it's at 1:30.
Okay, no, all right.
Are you sending this electronically to us? To me, could you do that, or Laurel, I guess Laurel will have it.
It's on the.
It is.
It's on the web.
It's on the web, yes.
Okay, well, it only has to go into the EPC agenda packet anyway, so you have that.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, Melanie, staggered membership terms on EPC and EPC.
Okay. You remember that both EPC and EPC asked structure and functions to look at the staggered terms, and so we came back with a plan, and so I just put it before you, and it was unanimous with us just to see if it could go on the consent calendar for the Senate. And so I laid out the situation there for APC, that three terms ended in 2004, then we had this bubble in 2005. The same kind of issue for EPC. We had this bubble in 2005 and only one term ending in 2006. So the recommendation is merely to, you can see in bold below under recommendation, that for APC, the six members to be elected in 2005, four would have a three-year term and two would be one-year terms, and then that would even out the staggering. And for EPC, of the five members to be elected, three would have three-year terms and two for one-year terms, and so then that would kind of take care of the problem.
Is there an objection to referring this to the Senate?
This is a good solution.
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
Got that one in the middle of the night.
Okay, so is it okay for that to go on the consent calendar?
And I will not be at the next Senate meeting, so.
All right, we have some time before our next time certain, so why don't we go to reports. President Arminyan is not here, Provost Ochoa is not here, Statewide Senator McGow is not here. Chair-elect of the Senate is here.
I don't really have much to report.
Okay. Vice President Schlerer is here.
I have nothing.
Okay. Chairs of the Standing Committees. Bob Coleman, APC.
APC has taken a look at general education pathway. and is making a positive recommendation that the Senate engage in and adopt the pathway resolution that's going to be coming forward. That's one thing that we've done, and we've completed that today, and I can, the document is, the statement, I should say, from the committee is going to be submitted first to EPC, because EPC is basically a partner in this matter of looking at this question. We also have looked at the question of 120 unit limitation, and we see this is going to have an enormous impact on our campus, especially with respect to the School of Education, which I've got early warning that this will have considerable impact on them. Also, it will have a considerable impact is another item that we dealt with, and that is the summer school issue. I don't know if you've all seen this, but this is what is occurring is basically that some time ago, as we were contemplating going to YRO, they tried to find an interim strategy for the campus not to go completely over to YRO. So funds were used from the general funds were used to carry through some aspect. I'm not quite clear right now of what aspect that was, either in support dollars or of some sort.
Fee reduction.
Fee reduction. And in any case, that was brought up by a number of part-timers throughout the state and here on campus, as I understand it. With the consequences that the arbiter has ruled that the summer sessions are going to have to pay the faculty who've taught in the summer sessions on the basis of their regular salaries. That will have a tremendous impact on, of course, on extended education, but more importantly is the retreat from the summer that is being contemplated and the impact that will have on the curriculum. So we want to take a careful look at what that impact will be and the consequences for that. So those are the things that we are looking at right now. One last item is that we are we have also reviewed the long-range plan, and there are some comment, some concern members of the executive planning committee around the issue of the place of disciplines within that statement. And some members feel that that is not does not particularly highlight the role of disciplines, with the consequence that it will have a lot to say about what we who we consider of ourselves of as a liberal arts campus, the relationship between disciplines and interdisciplinarity. Okay. So that will be coming forward for you. So that's where we are. We're looking at the, I don't know if the transferability issue has passed us by entirely, but we're visiting it anyway.
The statewide Senate has resolutions up May 6th and 7th, so if you have comments.
Yeah,
and that will be. Talked about that.
Yeah.
Okay. One other comment about summer session. There is a side agreement between CFA and the CSU that will let this summer session go forward as usual.
Oh.
And where things start getting questionable is in summer of 2005. And the trying to figure out, because the president and the provost, and I don't know about if Larry, you know anything about this, but the last time I talked to him was about midweek, was that they were not clear about what the consequences of this would be on the campus, other than if the back pay that's going to have to be paid for the last 3 years will probably come out of the School of Education. And that may have some impact on money that extended ed gives back to the departments for courses that are taught by faculty in different departments. And secondly, they're not clear whether or not faculty are going to have to continue to be paid at the state rate if a campus does not accept any YRO money. And apparently the chancellor wants to keep fees at the regular fall-spring level as opposed to the higher fees of the summer session level. And that's going to decrease the number of resources available to pay anybody to teach summer session. And it means probably fewer classes and larger classes, which means some of those smaller classes that do specialized things. And in social sciences, one of those is the Belize Archaeological Project that Bill Poe and Sue Hayes set up may be at risk, because they usually take, they have, the way they work it out, it's two classes of 10 people each that they take down to Belize with them to do the archaeological stuff. I don't know about the rest of the schools, but those kinds of classes may be in jeopardy. So there are some significant consequences, mm-hmm. as Bob was saying, for the curriculum. So just to keep that in mind, and I mean, the provost will be here, so we could talk more about that today, but I guess he's off doing provost things. Okay, Elaine.
last executive committee meeting, you all asked EPC to take a look at this issue about the withdrawal policy and in general faculty engagement and enrollment policy changes. And we drafted two resolutions which are in dramatic change at the moment. But we started discussing that. Unfortunately, Catherine Crabb could not join us at that meeting, but she will be joining us for a first reading of the radically revised resolutions for next week. So we're dealing with those issues. Secondly, we took up the matter last week, some of you may know about this, of this emergency general education course substitution policy that it was put forward by Bill Balbula in the Arts and School of Arts and Humanities, that essentially the resolution essentially said that all schools should put forward proposals to the GE subcommittee that would make, it would consider all of their courses as possible GE substitution courses for others, and to put forward as a unit a package of GE course substitutions in order to spread FTE issues out over a broader range of groups. This came up from the English department having three classes for the C2 requirement that, because of our reduced number of faculty coming up this next year, couldn't possibly handle the load of students coming through, and so this would give students more choice. The way the proposal was written, though, we've now had two readings of this. We had a special meeting today of EPC, and I just want to let you know what the outcome of that was. We ended up not approving that proposal, but instead approving the specific course substitutions that the School of Arts and Humanities had proposed to solve that problem. Because we felt that this particular resolution, it wasn't unanimous, but as a whole, in general, people were feeling that that resolution was a little too broad. It was a little unclear what such a proposal would do over, you know, in general, like what would actually happen because of that. So that was a particular thing that we spent a lot of time looking at, and it's bringing up more generally these issues with general education reform about broadening the selection of general education in general for students in the mid-level, the 200, 300, 400 level courses. So that's what we've been doing.
Thank you.
Can I ask a question? Did anyone speak with Catherine Crabb about the PeopleSoft issue of at least allowing us access to see when students withdraw?
We're working on that issue.
EPC is?
You guys had asked us to deal with that issue. So we had a first reading of a resolution addressing that issue last week. Catherine?
It was a PeopleSoft issue, so we can find out at least, because when you go into our class rosters, you've got a drop-down menu, mm-hmm. but it only tells you those students that dropped at the beginning of the semester, and we have no idea.
Right, I understand your question more now. We haven't solved that problem yet.
And because I remember the provost had said, well, somebody contacts Catherine that maybe they can just fix it in there. So she probably is not even aware of that, or
she has seen the drafts of the resolutions. I think she knows that's the problem. I do not know if it's fixed yet.
Yeah, I don't think it is. Yeah. Okay.
Thank you. Elizabeth?
Yes, sir. We reviewed the conflict of interest policy by the board by Tony Appoloni and Eileen Warren, and that is reviewed that today, and so that's ready to come to the executive committee next meeting.
Okay.
We're still working on the course outline policy. We talked to general ed and campus climate, so it just keeps getting longer and longer, but hopefully.
conversation.
What are you coming? maybe this semester.
A book roll around.
Everyone wants something in it. That's all.
That's all? Okay, Brigitte, student affairs?
So we keep looking into the advising issues, and we met with the provost earlier this semester and asked him to bring our concerns to the deans and the teens, to the department chairs, and to report back to us. And so now we are getting those reports back, and we've heard from 3 schools, and so 2 still waiting on those. And then I was also hoping the provost would be here, because we also had some general suggestions. He has been meeting with other committees and other people to talk about those, and so we're hoping to get that report too. So hopefully after we meet the next time, then I have something more definite to say on that. So we're putting all of those together, and the associated students also have been meeting with the senators in each school, have come up with issues that they see in their schools, and so they also are putting that together electronically, and then we'll get it, and then we'll put all of that together and make recommendations of how to deal with it. Some good things have happened. I don't know if you've noticed, Catherine Scruff has been sending around some email mm-hmm. to all students, reminding mm-hmm. them of advising and who has mm-hmm. to see who, and so get that information out. So that hopefully will help. The advising center is having workshops. They've always had that, but they also now again have workshops on that. A second issue, Randling was telling us that as of recently, I think the freshman class is more or less full, so enough students have sent in their enrollment deposit. The deadline is May 1st, but enough have already sent it in, so that except for reserved spots, they are all taken. So people who send in now will be on a waiting list. The index, the test GPA, that index used to be 2900, and now I think it's 3400 for students coming to SSU. So one concern that we have and that we'd like to find out about, and invite Gustavo Flores to report on the makeup of the freshman class for next semester, to see how, if diversity is going down.
You mean if any brown faces in that white world?
So that's how I put it, yeah.
So that's one thing. And last one, we were also looking at the W drop issue. And we looked at the schedule of classes, and in there, actually, compared to this semester, things have changed a little. I don't know if you've seen it, but the W drop date now for next semester is September 21st, so that's the first 4 weeks. And after that, you need a very, very, very good reason, and it defines very good reason. It doesn't say very good, it says something else.
Compelling.
Compelling, that's right. And it also defines what a not compelling reason is. Actually, we were wondering who made that change.
I think that's a good question, because I even had questions about the compelling. I mean, there were things like you saw, well, if your work situation changes, I mean, and I think that's a good point of who, where that policy came from.
Is that, what is the name of the subcommittee of student affairs, the standards?
University standards.
University standards, would they be involved in that?
I think they looked at it right after our meeting yesterday.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know what has happened to that.
Would you mind looking into that for us?
We're looking into that anyway.
Okay.
One interesting thing Janet Swing was saying, I think she was saying that she talked to the registrar and somehow it's state mandated or something. It's a big if here, like that it's a Title V thing. But Chico State is almost identical. I looked on the web and their definition, even so the schedule is the same, and compelling reasons and list of not compelling reasons is almost the same, so maybe there is something.
Check it out for us.
Yeah.
No, that's it. That was wondering what it was, whether what this is came to us by way of the state or but it still was going to raise some questions about exactly who is going to make determinations about what happens with respect to the, you know, like comes from the state, you know, where, you know, are there faculty there making that decision, you know?
Just
one thing I should have said as a report for student affairs is that it's nearly a miracle, but Laurel and I still sit here alive after our great appeal semester. But we did have 9 great appeals, and the 5 that were in the same class that were originally set up as one were combined, so that became one great appeal, and that one is just about completed. I managed to informally resolve 2 more, and I'm working on another. And we had one that took place. And so it was an incredible amount of work and stress this semester for both Laurel and myself. And thanks to Laurel, because in terms of handling all of that documentation, after we finish this last one, we really do want to sit down and talk with student affairs, but also talk among ourselves and bring you in about suggested changes for the future. That's one thing. I do have a question regarding, this is not the report, but just the replacement of our at-large senator. So structure and function is supposed to name a short-term replacement, but this is for long-term, so we have an election. So the election will actually probably begin, I mean, if we can get this done this year, it's going to be starting in the fall. Do we want to bring in another at-large senator from the academic senate to sit on for this semester to be a voice on the executive committee? I don't even know who the other at-large person is.
The executive committee, the senate chooses its representatives to the executive committee, so we don't have any.
Okay, so with that, but we don't have any, there's nothing in the bylaws about that kind of replacement, so are you going to ask the Senate to choose someone to sit?
Yes.
It's on the agenda.
Yeah, and if somebody volunteers and there's no objection, we're done. And I'm hoping that's the way it goes.
But it's from the at-large, right? And so we
The Senate chooses 2 of its representatives to come to this body.
That's, of course,
and it can be
right.
Anybody on the
right,
Senate.
Right, right, right. Got it.
Okay.
Do we have time for one question?
Yes.
This is for the students. On advising, has there been discussion about preparation of faculty for advising mm-hmm. students with all the changes now that the advising report is online and students are encouraged to read it? Well, maybe let me ask this specifically. Are students being encouraged to print out their transcripts and their advising report before they come in?
I thought yes. That was what was in the letter from
yes. Yeah.
Is that
yeah,
right? Okay.
I told my students that they were.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Okay, because I think that's going to be, I think a lot of faculty are not prepared to search it out.
Okay. All right, since our guest, Tim Wanlick from English, is here, and we are at the time certain for the agenda item proposal regarding consultation, the word consultation in Senate documents. You all have a copy of this sitting in front of you. Sent around, or somebody sent this around. Yeah, this is the extra copy. Does everybody have a copy of this? Larry, do you have one of these?
I do. Oh.
Tim, do you have one?
No, I don't.
We need the other copy on there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, thank you for joining us.
All right. Well, you guys are a smaller group than when I was last on executive committee. I don't know is this smaller than normal today?
It is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where is everyone?
All right. Not here.
This document that I sent to Catherine, I did not send it as a resolution initially. I just sent it as an idea. I said, I think you guys should look at this. And then
that's in your agenda packets.
And then she said, well, would you come to speak to the executive committee about it? And I said, well, do you want me to frame it more in the nature of an actual change? So I was trying to look over the language. And the main language that I copied actually from Chico State, so I have no attachment to the language itself. It's the concept that I'm interested in, which is underlying number D in the document in front of you, which is fiscal policies related to the first 3 areas broadly and liberally defined. And that language is directly out of Chico State's constitution, which I attached at the end of the document. And that language mirrors the language which is in the Higher Education Employee Relations Act, at least as it's revised as of 2001. I don't know what the previous history was of that document, but that seems to be the governing body for what we do here at Sonoma State. And what's, I've noticed, you know, I've only been here 7 years, but I've noticed a lot of tension on this issue over what is meant by consultation, what are the parameters of consultation. Mm-hmm. And I really think the phrase joint decision making is a powerful phrase to introduce into appropriate documents. Not that, I mean, the president and the administration ultimately will have fiscal authority. They do have delegated to them by the CSU to make all financial decisions for President Armenata to do that. But I think there would be room to distinguish then between consultation and joint decision making. For instance, we would always be consulted. We are currently consulted at PBAC and the PBAC and such places as like that. But there might be another way for the Senate to indicate that it's jointly deciding to do a strategic project. I think if we had that language available to us, it would give us the opportunity to, in many ways, maybe improve the buy-in at the faculty level for some of the president's strategic initiatives. I am not, you know, regardless of what, I think you should adopt this regardless, but I am not in favor of doing what President Armenata has called micromanaging his budget. I don't think that's an effective strategy. I'm not saying to produce this document for us to begin doing that, to question every little item. But I do think the wind has been taken out of the sail of previous Senate discussions on the matter of budgets by saying the budget is not in the purview of the Senate. And yet we all know the intimate interactions between budget and curriculum matters. I do think whatever language that you use, whether you use this language which I borrowed from Chico State or something else, you should try to encourage strategic thinking is what I would recommend, and that's certainly what I've been trying to do lately, is really encourage faculty members to take a role in thinking through the strategic planning of their own curriculum and how that needs to be supported and to articulate that in a positive way. It doesn't behoove us necessarily to be negatively carping about other things that are going on, but just to really insist upon a strategic outlook for our own curriculum is what I want to say. That I think the Senate has absolutely every right to do that and has not really been able to do so. The Senate doesn't have standing by its own constitution to do so. Fiscal matters have always been ruled out of order. You know, we've passed resolutions, but the president has said that has no standing really in what I'm going to do vis-a-vis the budget. The Senate does not have standing to do that. So this was just something I came across when I was trying to see how other campuses are dealing with the budget crisis, how they dealt with problems historically. I shared it with Catherine. She seemed to think it was worth bringing up too. We do have a policy on faculty consultation on budgetary advisory matters, which still says on the university website that it's under revision. I'm not sure why it says that.
Because that's what happens. It's in structure
functions right now. Okay, so I think that whatever is decided here should go along the process of that revision too. One of the things that interested me there is that it says that the faculty members are not supposed to advocate for their schools or their departments, which again sort of takes the wind out of the sails for a real, I think, a necessary advocacy for academic programs at sometimes, not to tear down other things, but just say, hey, this is something that we need to have a voice to really advocate for the impact of curricular matters, fiscal matters on curricular matters. So that's my introduction.
Okay, so there are basically three different proposals being made here. The first one is that the word consultation throughout the Constitution, as I understand it, be replaced with the words joint decision making and consultation. It says in all relevant areas of the Constitution and policy. So you're looking at both the Constitution itself and any policy that the Senate is involved in or recommends that has the word consultation. Secondly, is to add fiscal policies language to the purposes of the Constitution in, I believe it's Article 1, Section 2, I think.
Yes.
And that would be to add the underlined D in that middle paragraph on the page. And the third proposal is for structure and functions to take a look at the language in the Senate consultation budgetary matters policy that specifically prohibits faculty members from acting as representatives of their schools or departments. So there really are three, maybe even four, if you look at constitution and policy. Different suggestions being made in this document. For the executive committee's information, elections with regard to constitutional amendments are generally held in the fall semester at convocation because they require a two-thirds turnout. right?
50%
turnout.
We have to vote, and two-thirds,
yeah, 50% of the faculty members, we have to vote, and we need a two-thirds vote of that 50% minimum to pass any constitutional amendment. So those are the kind of the issues that you frame the discussion here. I would also like to remind the executive committee that ours is a switching function, primarily that we are here to decide whether or not it is appropriate, this proposal is in appropriate format or is appropriate in and of itself to refer to structure functions or some other committee of the Senate. Having said that, discussion? Bob?
Well, I think that any proposal that comes forward is one that this order that has a constitutional change. The proper body is structure functions on this matter. And with that, I'd say we should refer it to structure and functions and not get engaged in a debate. I have my views on the issue of consultation and my views on the president's quote foreclosure of discussion. Because he forecloses it does not mean that we've foreclosed that discussion. Mm-hmm. But I do think it should be referred to structure and functions, and would like to move that it be so.
Is there a second? Is there a second?
Motion. Proposals that you mentioned, that to replace the words consultation with joint decision making and consultation as one, and the other one with the specific language here in two, I would support taking this directly to the Senate as these two proposals to be put on a ballot for the faculty to approve or not approve at the convocation this fall. So I would not support Bob's motion to send it to structure and functions first.
I guess Elaine, you and I are probably thinking on the same track because I concur with Elaine's argument and recommendation.
Anybody else? Melanie?
Well, structure and functions has three meetings left, and we are very much involved in this third point here with the with that policy, not specifically with this particular recommendation, but with revising that policy, and it's quite a comprehensive look at the policy. So I don't think we'll get it before the Senate this semester. So separating them out would bring action on part of it. And we have to remember that anything that doesn't finish this year in the academic senate has to start over as a first reading in the fall.
So we would need a first and second reading on anything, and there, I don't know if there's any language specifically talking about what the Senate needs to do with proposed constitutional amendments or not, but we can check that out. Vice President Schler.
Well, wherever it goes, I certainly would like to have something to learn more about it, because the way this is worded is very unclear to me. I think there are some substantial legal interpretations that need to be made, because it seems to me that the language is being tied back to a particular piece of legislation enacted by the legislature, which seems to relate to human resource matters and fiscal policies related thereto. So I as a Senate, I'm not a voting person, but if I were to try to understand it, it seems to me that that was the intent. I think you need to understand the legislative intent there, because it does seem to be relating primarily to employment actions, which is what, of course, the California Public Employee Relations Act relates to. It doesn't relate to budget management of the state of California. It relates to budget matters there. And when I read the Chico model, it also seems to be related to employment issues. But I haven't read it carefully enough to study that. So it just seems to me that someone should analyze it. Well, certainly the president's office is going to have to analyze those issues, as whatever comes forward to him.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I would say that this would be a stronger document if you could have the support and advocacy of the president's office as well. Listening to the conversation about this, I mean, I think it's something that could strengthen faculty consultation and faculty and administration working together, not necessarily be seen as another sort of adversarial move. So I would support the president's office doing that, and I would make the case directly to Ruben if he were here, but that's what we should do with this. I don't know about the language at least seems to me to talk about academic policies. So maybe those are meant to be related to strictly to personnel, but that was not my understanding of the document.
All the laws that are quoted are related to employment. Here is the Employment Act and the Public Employee Relations Act is clearly you. But, you know, I don't know.
Can I directly respond to that?
Oh, absolutely.
So just directly responding to that, I see what you're saying, that is what those first two sentences seem to imply. But when you read even that very first sentence, it's, as I understand it, I'm reading that this is about how the joint decision-making consultation between administration and academic employees, so it's talking about the relationship between the two.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think, is where the employee-employer relationship comes into play, not necessarily the topics about which the joint decision-making is happening.
I don't agree with you at all. But, I mean, that would be a subject of legal interpretation, of course. But I disagree.
Because when I read the second sentence in the first page, whatever is essential to the performance of the educational missions of these institutions.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the joint decision-making consultation between administration and faculty is the long-accepted manner of governing institutions of higher learning and is essential to the performance of the educational missions of these institutions, and declares that it is the purpose of this chapter to both preserve and encourage that process. So that sentence seems to mean that it's about the relationships between employer and employee as it pertains to dealing with the educational missions of the institution.
It doesn't tell us what goes on from there. We need to continue reading. This just tells you we don't want to. You need to know more than what you just said. You need to continue to read the law, what comes next. We don't want to, nothing that we say here is going to affect that, so let's continue to read the next subsequent paragraphs to see what the law actually says. That's just a sort of preamble to the legislation.
So what did the law actually do? It should be like an abstract, right?
Okay, Bob Coleman is on the speaker's list.
Well, whatever the law says, we have to remember that this refers itself to the constitution of the Academic Senate of SSU. And as such, it is the language that is appropriate for this faculty body to put forward about what it expects to take place between itself and how it defines consultation. The president does not approve our constitution.
Actually, yes, he does. Yes, he does. Yes, he does. He's final authority after the vote of the faculty. Sorry.
And the president actually approves our constitution in terms of what we have.
Yes. His final vote over any change.
That's why you want him on board.
Well, certainly we want him on board. I am not saying that. But I thought that fine. And that's an awakening moment for me, because I always thought that's really an awakening moment. I just want to finish out. But it makes it even more imperative that we take the time to work through this document. That was my lead point. That the Senate actually puts forward its best position as it understands it, and then let us work out the details of that. But then putting that best position forward is a ranging discussion that will include all the stakeholders, really.
Which is, so you think it should go to structure and
function? I think it should go to structure and function.
Tim?
I don't know. I have no standing to say this, but my original suggestion was that it go to structures and functions, that this was just, I don't think that there's a time urgency on this. Mm-hmm. And I agree with Larry, and the reason I put the website on there is that I think that everybody involved in this should look that over carefully and decide what the language means. And I also agree with what Bob just said, which is that regardless of that, whatever you think here is talking about, which I think is an entree into the discussion and to grounding the instruction legal matters of just really involving us more, especially strategically, in the discussion of fiscal matters here on this campus and giving us a way to weigh in on that. So I don't think that you necessarily have to prove that point in HERA, but I think HERA gives us language to suggest that maybe we could have a stronger role in there, and that's why I brought it up.
Robert Nathan?
Understanding the time constraints with point three, that's not going to come forward, could structures and functions deal with the first two points to get it out, do you believe, in time for the Senate to deal with it this academic this spring? Realistically,
well, if it's putting together a constitutional ballot with making these explicit changes, that's not that time consuming.
Right.
If it's really to try to work with the president's office to come to some greater understanding and perhaps, you know, agreement, that's a little more involved. I will say that Catherine and I met with the president. We did bring up this issue. And I think that if we just plow ahead and have a constitutional amendment and bring it through the Senate, it's just not going to be signed. And go through the whole ballot, I really don't see it being signed by the president. But if we do take the time now to try to research this, and I think that if HERA is viewed as strictly employee relations, I think that it won't, even if it lends language, it won't strengthen our rationale, it will detract from it. So I think it would be advisable for us to come to an understanding about what it is, what an agreement with this, and to meet, not necessarily just through structuring functions, it could be through this body, but we have that meeting with the president and a series of meetings, because I really don't think he's just going to jump right on board with this. And
he just wants to know.
Yeah, and I think that a greater, more effective and faster and efficient way is to revise the blue paper. Because right now, this constitutional amendment would be in conflict with the official policy of the university, which will give him an easy way to veto it and say it's inconsistent with the blue paper. So I think you want to work on the blue paper.
Which one is that?
Faculty consultation on budget matters. That's the one that needs revision. And that's a more efficient way to deal with what you're trying to get to, if you ask me. Because you can just get it done.
No.
One thing that we talked about in structure and functions is we started off with just, you know, revising the membership and then checking out the charges and then seeing what actually should be in there, what should come out and what should be replaced. And so it's really been snowballing. But then we had the idea that maybe that's an appropriate place to have a preamble and to really define consultation. And this could maybe even broaden our consideration of that. So that our plan is to add a little preamble to that where we actually introduce the concept and define it. And so maybe it would be changed somewhat through this process, but.
I'm still recovering from my shock.
But the
reason that I'm saying that is because of all the years that I have seen changes go through in the Senate around our Constitution, I've never heard mention of the President signing off on it.
Yeah, it's right there.
No, what I mean is I'm sure it's there. I'm sure it's there from what you've said. But in other words, in the discussions, if you think in the Senate, I've never heard someone said, you know, and we will submit it for the president to sign off from, off on it with respect to.
The Constitution may be amended on petition of 25% of the faculty or through a motion passed by 2/3 majority of the Senate, which petition or motion must be ratified by a 2/3 majority of the faculty voting at a meeting of the faculty or by a 2/3 majority of faculty voting in a referendum, provided that more than 1/2 of the faculty votes in such referendum and provided that in either case the proposed amendment has been distributed to the faculty at least 15 academic days in advance of the action of the faculty. Amendments become effective upon the concurrence President of the United States.
Of the concurrence. That's a good word. But I the word approved was the one that was.
this constitution shall become effective on joint approval. So it became, this is the way they distinguished the enactment of this constitution. This constitution shall become effective on joint approval by a majority of the faculty voting and the president of the university. So there is, it's interesting what you say, but I would say he wouldn't concur.
I just would, I mentioned this before and I didn't write this in this document. My advice, listening to all of this, is to send it back to structures and functions, is to do the blue policy and this together at the same time, to not worry about getting it ready at any particular time, but just try to get it right, to try to get the president on board. And in doing so, I think to recognize that the kind of micro, by micro, I mean even things as big as $100,000, which seem like a lot to us, level debates and arguments. The carrot to hold out to President Armenianna, I think, is to say, we won't do that anymore. Let's have strategic level discussions about where our academic resources are going. Let's leave those kinds of discussions to PBAC and BPAC. Because I was on the Senate for 6 years, and a lot of arguments were going on about those kinds of matters, which to me impair productivity. I think part of the argument here really needs to be about, let's be more productive and how we proceed. And as long as we get passionately, you know, yoked into arguing about one of those particular things, I don't know those sort of line item things. You know, maybe if you want to introduce the concept of strategic versus, you know, more line item thinking about academics. I think this, what I'm trying to say here is about strategic planning. And that's what the Senate should be involved with, not necessarily the kind of line item stuff that the Budgetary Advisory Committee still have.
Well, I would then like to amend the motion to include the blue paper policy on consultation, what's it called? Consultation.
It's faculty consultation on budgetary matters.
Thank you. To include that with the recommendations thus far stated here.
I hope you're addressing that toward me since I'm the maker of the motion, but I'll take that.
Would you accept a friendly amendment?
No. I think that's really to the point.
I thought that was in the original motion.
No, the original motion did not include the blue book.
Okay.
I mean the blue paper.
Is there a second?
Excuse me.
I'll second that. Is there any objection?
Okay.
I'm confused because they already have the policy. So what are you referring to?
They're considering
Tim,
it.
Tim has made it. Tim has made a suggestion for a specific.
I didn't know that.
Type of for consideration of a specific section of the policy.
Okay.
By structure and functions in this document.
Yeah.
And Robert was proposing that Bob's motion be amended to include that specific section of Tim's recommendation.
Oh, the original motion wasn't for the whole thing to go to structure.
Exactly.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, is there any discussion of the motion? I'm sorry, there was no objection to the amendment, right?
No.
Any other discussion of the amended motion?
Did you? I'm sorry, point of clarification. Was yours a formal motion to bring it forward? No.
All right. All those in favor? Any other discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Tim's proposals have been referred to structure and functions. Thank you.
Thank you, Tim. Thanks for your work on this.
Thanks for making the childcare arrangements to come. Mm-hmm. All right. Okay, we're through with reports, and so we are.
Can
on
I ask
the,
a question?
Sure.
If we, I'd like to want to move off the agenda and take questions for. I was going to ask a question of our Vice President. Sure. If that's all right.
Why don't we go ahead with Julie Dowd share policy, and then we'll go back to questions for people having given reports, and then we can go on to the agenda.
Well, I want to bring this up to you because I am on the search committee for this endowed chair. And as I...
Can you give us some background?
The background is that an endowed chair, well, first of all, monies came to the university by way of the Great Ranchero Indians to the tune of $1.5 million, and this chair will be one in Native American Studies. It will be housed in the Humanities Department, and so what we have now is a search committee going. We've written up a POA, but we don't have a policy. for endowed chairs on this campus. And it is absolutely crucial, as I looked around the university, various universities, I went to a number of different sites on my little 2 o'clock adventure into the world of the web, and I found that there are policies at Chico, at Long Beach, at San Luis Obispo, at San Jose, Fresno, Sacramento, Long Beach. And all of them, and this is just within our own system, and then I went and looked at some issues that had to deal with the concerns that people have. Let me give you just a sense of what some of those are. The issue of establishing a chair and running a policy with conditions under which a chair will be established. Issues of the appointment of the chair, periods when the chair would be occupied, annual reporting on the chair, issues of discontinuation of the chair, issues of support for the chair. And it was on that issue of support of the chair that my big ears went up. And they went up because I figured out that there was a discrepancy between the POA and the amount of money that could be generated. I went and I figured this out. And Larry, I'm glad you're here, because you might be able to help us in this little thing. But if we have $2 million, and we are going to get 5% of that annually, and that's good money in these times, that will give us $100,000 annually. Am I correct? Now, if the chair is a senior chair, that is, it is a senior, which means that it would be someone would be paid about what I get right now as a professor after 34 years, which is $83,000. That's the downside of it. Has to be someplace between $83,000 and $100,000. Well, if it is a place between $180,000 and $100,000, all you're going to get off of this is $100,000 at $2 million. Well, you only have $1.5 million, $1.5 million, which means that you're going to get less. Now, a salary, if we figure a salary is at $98,600, and then you have benefits for another $46,000, alone that would be
33%.
I figured it would come to 33. Okay. So anyway, it's 33,000. You're still going to be in excess of the money that you need. That does not take into consideration any travel office expenses. So my little package, let's lop off very easily, 15,000, bring us back to 30,000. We're still at $145,000. That's on $2 million. We don't have enough money to pay for the position out of the endowment. So where does the money come from? The money obviously has to come from someplace. And where is it going to come from?
Is 5% a good assumption?
5% is a very good figure. That's been tossed around. I mean, I think I'm being fairly legitimate in terms of the discussions we've had about endowments, other endowments that have been here on the university.
In today's market, if I may respond, I think that is not a bad number, unless there's some specific investment that the endowment is tied to by the donor. There's one that we're getting from the Galbraith Preserve, for example, that has an 8% guaranteed rate for 30 years. It's a very unusual investment. I don't really know all the details, but it's a very nice return, and it's a guaranteed thing.
But my thought,
I don't think that's the case of this one.
Right, and so my consideration of it being at the level of 5% is just about right. So my question is that if that's the case, we're going to be looking, if you go the 1.5, we're going to probably be looking at something like 60,000 plus that's going to have to come from someplace else. Well, the only other place that I know is general funds. And I would like to know whether or not we have a policy that's going to guard against endowed chairs drawing on general funds to support them. And I think that we should be very clear about the fact that general funds should not be drawn upon to run programs that are endowed-based, regardless of what they are.
Okay, so that's the proposal.
That's my little...
Who do we refer this to?
Has anyone asked the provost office who's paying the difference? I just honestly don't know, out of curiosity. Maybe there is a plan, Bob, that we don't know about.
Well, my point is that it's a plan that everyone should know about.
Oh, I agree with you, I just...
Yeah.
Maybe we should ask if water can come, return some...
Well, I was hoping to ask water today where the money was gonna come from.
That's a separate issue, we still need the policy.
Yeah, but I think the policy...
Well, we need the policy, but what I'm saying is that the money issue is what alerted me to the absolute need for the policy.
Okay, so we need a policy, it sounds very straightforward. Down chair policy that will make sure that general fund money does not go to pay for salary and benefits of endowed chairs.
We have other, there are other kinds of issues, like...
Expenses associated with...
Expenses, travel, et cetera.
Expenses associated with, okay.
And discontinuation.
He also has an assessment review out of the room, so he does have a sample policy.
Okay, do you have a specific policy proposed?
No, I don't have, but I have models from other institutions in the CSU.
Okay, so we have institutional models, where do we send this?
I think this needs to go...
FSAC?
To FSAC.
Okay.
And the reason for that is that, I wanna point out, it's not only the question of the endowment money that's signed, it's also in terms of faculty review issues. You know, what kind of response will this faculty have? Are these individuals going to be offered a tenured position, which is something that, you know, and who offers that, you know? You come in, you're going to be offered a tenured position. I mean, yeah.
So do the policies that you looked at speak to the issue of not using general fund money to...
Some of them say very specifically that the endowment must be supported, the chair must be supported by the endowment.
Okay, Bob, can you send an email to Elizabeth with a summary of what you just told us?
I'll do better than that, I'll send her all the copies of all the endowed chairs that I looked up.
Okay, we have the websites for those, but fair, or we have the name, but fair enough, if that's what you wanted to get from the specific material.
Yeah.
And that way FSAC will have background, it will have your rationale, it will have all the...
There are points that I would like for them to consider, but I'm, you know...
Exactly, and get all of those that you just said. Robert, did you have a comment?
I'm just curious, is there something that's gonna impede your going forward with the search right now?
Well, that's exactly it. There's nothing that is impeding us going forward with the search right now, and that is what disturbs me. So we have a search that's going forward. We're going to offer someone a position, and that's going to be an offer coming from the university. And so if we do that, then we are going to be legally committed to that individual and to his funding. And I want to know where that money is going to be coming from.
Perhaps you can work out some kind of agreement with the provost about this search specifically, some kind of temporary or interim agreement between the School of Arts and Humanities and the provost about this will not come out of general fund money. I know we need a campus-wide policy for this, but at least an interim
agreement
for the school itself. And then we can expand it to campus-wide. I don't know.
Well, you're going to have to, they're truly, the interesting thing is that when you look at that endowment, the endowment issues, it's fraught with questions about what happens if you get someone in here who's conducting themselves in a particular way, how do you get rid of them? Or how do you review an individual's performance?
Faculty review.
What's your issues that FSAC should address in the policy? Okay, there.
The question of where the funds are coming from is easily answered. My office does not, our budget office doesn't allow a search for a permanent position to go forward until the department or the school identifies the permanent funding. So someone knows, Colette knows, I just don't know.
Well,
but someone's got to know, otherwise the search could never have been allowed to proceed. So someone in academic faculty affairs or Colette's office has to know where that cash
is. Well, I can tell you, I suspect it is going to come out of general funding. And that's exactly why I want to say that we should have a policy that says no to that.
Okay, so you take that issue up with the provost and let us know.
You want me to go invite with the provost? No, I think that it's...
I'll ask the provost. I'll do it.
I'm doing the policy.
No, it's a legitimate question.
It's a legitimate question.
Yeah.
I'll take it up.
The chair will do it.
I brought the matter of the...
I'll talk to you about it.
Are you chairing the search committee?
No. They don't make me chair things like that.
Okay, so on behalf of the executive committee, I'll ask the provost about the general fund issue here. Okay, so is there any objection to referring this to FSAC?
Great idea.
Cool.
Any more meetings?
Okay, well, what we have left on the agenda then, as far as I can tell, is the Senate agenda, except for Elaine has a question for Larry, so we have to fix it first. This is a great opportunity. Is that right?
First of all, I wanted to say thank you for that presentation you gave at the Budget Summit. That was very informative, and I learned a lot from looking at the different funds and looking at the way that costs have changed over the years. I appreciate that. So I just have a small question for you. Those beautiful tables out in the quad have generated a lot of discussion, the students, faculty, whatever. And I really just wanted to ask, were those a gift to the university, or did they come out of enterprises, or which one of those funds?
You were paid for by Sonoma State Enterprises.
Enterprises.
I don't think this is the current number. I don't know where this came from.
A student generated this.
It's lovely, but I'm not sure that's the real number.
No, I'm sure it's not, but...
But you should see the student's backyard. Oh, sorry.
Is there an issue with it?
I don't know, Elaine.
Well, I can maybe relate some of the talk that's come up around the building, because I think it's maybe important to hear that feedback, I mean, for whatever it's worth. And the issues that come up is that just on the face of it, what it looks like in this issue when students are being faced with gigantic classes next semester and reduced sections, and the concerns about their favorite faculty and lecturers are getting laid off or not hired back. I think that there is concern about the symbolism of what that is.
I haven't heard it until this moment, but I will certainly raise it in the CRC tomorrow afternoon. Find out if it's the intent that all aspects of the campus that are not related to construction should just be let go. The corporate enterprises will routinely, for example, replace furniture or equipment that's outmoded. The tables that were out there on that quad, if you looked at them, they're literally falling apart.
But they are over.
This metal one, not the wood ones. They were wood ones. That is the primary intent. And we will routinely go through our residence halls this summer and recarpet, refurnish. So I'll get a sense from re-engineering if it's the sense that those things should cease. Because there is a routine upgrade that happens, whether or not that's a good thing or a bad thing.
Related to that, I know in my class, the students were looking out and looking at those chairs, and they were worried they were going to be stolen, so they were wondering why they weren't chained down like the other chairs. So.
The tables are bolted.
Oh,
the tables are bolted. Yeah.
Better count the chairs.
I was worried they were going to be rained on.
I went and read the label. I thought maybe it had somebody's name on it.
I thought that I actually stopped and looked, but it's just...
It's a discompany company.
It's this company.
Bob has a question for Larry, I guess.
Oh, no, it's not a question for Larry.
Okay, hold on. Are there any more questions for Vice President Schlereth on this issue? Hearing none. Bob? Is this a question for Vice President
Schlereth? No, this is a question to the body here.
Okay, is it something for the good of the order? Is it?
It's probably good for the good of the order. Could I do that?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. I just wanted us to know what we were doing.
I'm sitting in a place that is occupied usually by my colleague with the weapon. And I'm disturbed with the idea that he has resigned. And I think that we need to find out why it is that, unless it is for matters of health, that a colleague of ours, Ludwig, would resign from our body. Because
I don't think it's just one thing. I think it very well may be that however it is, it's an accumulation of something. Because he cares a great deal about traveling Germany. So I'm very concerned that his voice is not here. And I would like to at least to discuss or reflect on what it is that we are or not doing as a faculty that would have one of our members like Rick resign. And those of you who know me know that Rick and I have bumped heads a lot of times, but we've also sat together and come together on a lot of issues. And I value his presence. And I feel a loss about him being here. He's very detailed, he's very studied in matters of the Senate. And it's a loss for the Senate as a whole. And we need to find out why, and we need to encourage him to return. I will go personally to him, but I think his body needs to do it.
In the absence of any specific formal communication from Rick about why he has resigned, I think a discussion of the reasons for his resignation are inappropriate at this point. I think, given that he has resigned, we have already agreed, I believe, or at least once we approve the agenda, we will have agreed to go forward with appointing a replacement. And we've already asked Structure and Function to set up an election for the special election to replace him for the remaining 2 years of his term. If the executive committee would like me as chair to formally communicate with Rick and ask if he would be willing to give us a statement of his reasons for resigning so we have a formal communication from him to discuss. That is certainly seems to me to be an appropriate thing to do. You have suggested that we encourage him to come back. I don't know that is a little more of a gray area for me, given that we have already agreed to, again, if the agenda of the Senate is approved, to appoint someone temporarily, get the Senate to appoint someone temporarily, and there's no problem with that being Rick, if, you know, for the remaining two executive committee meetings afterwards. However, the issue that would throw, it seems to me, the issue of the election and the referral to Structure and Function of the issue of that election into some tiz. So, having said that, Noel.
I'd like to, I believe that the idea of hearing from Rick is good, because he really has, unless, I mean, basically kept his silence, you might say. And I do agree with Bob that it's a significant step on his part. I do support your suggestion that inquiry be made. I'd like to see him invited to come to this body and to be invited to offer a discussion of his resignation.
Anybody else want to talk about this?
Well, I just add, and I don't see it quite so inappropriate to talk about this. Number one, it was brought up as for the good of the order. But I think I too am concerned, and I have no information, particularly because he was voted as a senator at large, as I was, by his colleagues to represent them here. And so it is particularly upsetting, I think. I think you stated it very well. I think you speak for many of us here, whether mm-hmm. we agree with Rick or not. He's been an important member of this committee, so I would support your suggestion if he is willing to do that,
right.
Because he may have some good feedback for us.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody else? No?
Well, just that if he's not wanting to really come back to discuss it, that maybe he at least meet with you. Authorize you to
give us feedback if he's not wanting to come?
Would it be all right to offer him a written option as well? Is there an objection to that?
Yeah, whatever. Has he also resigned from the Senate?
Yes.
Yes.
After the Senate meeting, both Catherine and I received a one sentence resignation.
That's it.
He included me among the recipients.
There was one sentence. So then I will invite Rick to come to the executive committee if he is willing and discuss his resignation or with me or send us a letter, whatever his preference is, so we have some understanding formally of why he chose this course of action. And if the executive committee wishes to discuss it, whether it's here or not, depending on whether it's written or in person, then that's great.
Could we hold on the action to replace him?
Yeah. We have, I would...
We're not compelled to do so unless he's missed three meetings.
No, he has resigned. There is formally an opening, and we only have two Senate meetings left, and we only have two executive committee meetings left. And I think as a matter of, to me, it would be important to fill that faculty place on that Senate, that the Senate had its full representation here on the executive committee from the at-large members. The at-large member from the Senate to this body. As I said, if Rick can be persuaded to, you know, to be that person, that's great. But if the executive committee wants to talk to him, we don't meet for another 2 weeks, which means next week we would not be able to appoint someone to come back to the executive in effect, we would have somebody come back for one executive committee meeting. To me, that's, you know, I'm a little leery of holding the position open for somebody unless we. On the off chance, or maybe it's a good chance, I don't know, we can persuade somebody to come back unless somebody wants to contact him privately at the same time that I'm contacting him formally or the executive committee and encourage him to come back.
I was just thinking that because we will need to put a call out for nominations if we're going to have an election, so that should move quickly. Separate from the vote of the Senate to have someone here, but if when someone resigns, respect their resignation, but also in companies, if we have a corporate model, then it's up to the employer whether or not they accept that resignation. And we could ask you to first just meet with Rick and ask him to reconsider and to at least convey to him the sincere chagrin on the part of every member that we really do value his presence and his voice, and we consider it a tremendous loss, and we would welcome his reconsideration. And if that could happen, you know, quickly, so that we could actually still, within the week's time, put out a call for nominations if his decision is firm, and go to the Senate next Thursday for the replacement.
No. I'm
well, I think it's.
Oh, I just want to get on the list.
I support that, and I think that another reason is that I don't see a real compelling reason to put to have an election in the next full Senate to have him represented for one meeting here. I think that if there is just, well, I think we don't.
We have two executive committee meetings left after this.
So it would actually be two.
The question would be going.
Okay, I would think that if there's discretion there, that in this case it would be good to waive that. Okay. And there's time to have a special election we can have in the month of May, that I would like this time to work this through with Rick and then go through with a special election if that's what eventually happens. Because it has not been officially announced yet before the Senate, I mean, or at all, other than a couple emails. It's all been informal.
Okay, it was my plan to announce it at the next Senate meeting, so.
I understand.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. No.
I want to raise an issue that's sparked by this, but doesn't have to do with Rick specifically. That is the process whereby resignations become, what would you say, consistent with codified guidelines. That is, I don't think that an email communication should be accepted as the formal means of establishing a resignation, that it would be really important that such a person be then asked to submit the resignation in writing. We all know the limitations of email communications. Is it really from the person who has signed it? I have no doubt that Rick sent that email, but it would be best to ask that he and anyone else who takes a comparable action be requested to submit a signed statement of the resignation.
We can now submit our taxes electronically, so at least the government seems to think
they know who we are.
They've known who we are for a long time.
Is there any comment on this?
I think we are in an age in which an individual has a signature in one sense from a particular site and can always be validated by responding to it. I have sent it back that I accept your resignation.
Okay.
And then that should be the end of it.
Okay, that's fine.
I'd just like to support what Melanie said. I think that's a very nice way to go about it. And I thought your phrasing was very eloquent, too.
I wrote it down. Sincere should man value his presence and his voice, consider his resignation a loss, would welcome his reconsideration of his resignation. Within a week's time, because we have to do it. Okay.
Tell him I'll sabotage his bike if he doesn't show up.
Okay. All right. Moving on to the only thing we have left on the agenda, and it's only 25:25. Do you believe this?
This will take 45 minutes.
No. See, the president and provost aren't here, so we don't have the reports and question and answer session. All right. For the agenda, we have under consent items will be added the staggered membership terms on APC and EPC. I think everything else was referred to somebody. So we have on the agenda the lobbying and use of appropriate funds policy, copyright ownership, and presuming it goes forward, the election replacement for R. Lutman. I'm hesitant to take this off in case he says no. Perhaps we could take it off and then put it on at the beginning of the meeting.
We can put it on at the beginning of the meeting.
As chair of structure and functions, will move to add this to the agenda.
Well, I won't be there.
She won't be there.
APC
then, yeah, chair of APC. So you're not always there when we start.
I'll be there.
Incoming chair.
If you're not, I can say it has been requested. Mm-hmm. We will get it on. Okay, so we'll do that. All right. This is ridiculous.
Why not?
This is the shortest agenda we have had all year. Are you sure there's nothing else that should be here?
We put off one of the mayors or something.
No, but that's the next
jump. Let everyone enjoy that. Surprise the hell out of them. Yeah.
Well, there's plenty of room if the committee has something to come forward.
Yeah, I think EPC has dealt with everything, so.
Yes. Okay, and the other thing I would like to, before you go, folks, since the provost wasn't there, maybe that'll be the president. And we have not had a lot of time for reports. What I would like to caution you about as chairs of standing committees bringing all these policies forward is that historically this is the time when the Senate's agenda, apparently except for the next meeting, goes berserk. Okay? And we have a lot of big issues coming up. We're going to have the academic affairs strategic plan. We may have some of this GE thing coming up.
You're right.
Okay, some of that might be coming up. I know we have some other policies coming out of FSAC. So in terms of rushing things and all that kind of thing, please don't rush anything just because you want to rush it. make sure that you have carefully considered whatever it is you want to consider, because you can always put it on the agenda for next fall.
I know there are
some policies that may need to come out quickly, and that's fair enough. I'm just saying, just use your judgment in the process.
I think one of those is, of course, the endowment.
Don't worry, it won't be this semester.
Yeah.
I'm just asking you to use your judgment, because we do have what the mayor coming to say.
Oh, you think that should be quick?
And the strategic plan, first and second readings and all of that. Keep it in mind.
We just met today, so our next meeting isn't for 2 weeks. And then, in order to get it out, I just don't think there's any way.
Or we have any prospects of more endowed chairs?
No, but the prospect of setting precedent with the one that we do have is a concern that I have.
Okay, well, I'm checking with the provost on that, so make sure he knows the faculty's concerned about setting precedent. All right, so you want me to talk to Eduardo about the general fund and the endowed chair, get in touch with Rick Lutton. Is there anything else? Your soon-to-be ex-chair, she said, is some relief anyway. You want me to do between now and next?
We're going to plan the party.
A week from Saturday, April 24th. We don't know where it is yet.
I formally cannot be there, so don't think I'm just not showing up. I already made plans.
We're working on the details.
Sorry, yeah.
Okay, so can we have a break now?